Well, happy wash day and welcome to the premiere episode of Shamanic Reality. I am your host, Mark Johnson, and I want to welcome everyone to listening to the premiere of this show. This has been an idea brewing in my head for quite a while now. Most of you may know me as the co-host of Paranormal UK Radio here on the Paranormal UK Radio Network, with I Do Weekly with Irene Allen Plock every Wednesday night from 10 to midnight, Greenwich Mean and Eastern Time. But I'm starting this new venture, and at the moment I'm planning to do a one-hour show every other week. So it'll be here on Thursday nights at 11 o'clock, Greenwich Mean and Eastern Times. And we're going to be discussing what I call shamanic reality. And what is shamanic reality? Shamanic reality is a term that I've come up with as a different way of looking at the world through the eyes of shamanism. And so before we get into that, let me go into a little bit of a background for you. Now, many years ago, about 17 years ago, I was very interested in the last 20, 30 years in walking a more spiritual path. I kind of grew away from traditional religion, and I was very attracted towards a number of other types of spiritual, not so much practices, but understandings. And because I don't call what I have as a beliefs. Instead, it's more of a way of life, a way of living. And you know, I've always been attracted towards Native American and more Aboriginal types of spirituality. Not saying I follow Native religions in any way, shape, or form, because I'm a non-Native. Obviously, I'm white as white can be, hailing from the English Isles originally, from my ancestry. But yet, the idea of a shamanism has really called to me over the years. And I started on it about 16, 17 years ago, got away from it for a while, and then in the last couple of years, I've been brought back into it. And for those of you who don't know what shamanism is, okay, the Wikipedia definition is simply this. Shamanism is a practice that involves a practitioner reaching altered states of consciousness in order to perceive and interact with what they believe to be a spirit world and channel those transcendental energies into this world. That's partially correct. It's not a way of interacting just with the spiritual world or bringing those energies into this world. In my understanding, and I'm going to tell you right now, I don't consider myself an expert. I don't consider myself a shaman. I'm not a shaman. Okay? I have followed a shamanic path, sometimes more than others. I'm learning this as I go. This hasn't been a lifelong path for me. There are many people out there who follow a shamanic path who are a heck of a lot more knowledgeable than I am. But that doesn't mean that I can't talk about it, because I'm going to talk about my own experiences in this show. And moving forward, I'm going to be bringing on other shamanic practitioners, people who have been trained, people who have gone through their own experiences. And with shamanism, it's not a religion. Shamanism is not a religion. It's a practice. And it's a practice of interacting with energies. We can refer to them as spiritual energies or other types of energies that really surround us all the time. They are a part of our natural world. Hence why I'm calling this shamanic reality. Because reality is based on our perspective. We think it does anyway. And our current Western reality, in my opinion, is so far skewed and ignores so much of what is around us. You know, and being involved in the paranormal myself, and, you know, for many years as a paranormal investigator, I've had many of my own experiences over the years, you know, which has shown me that there is more to our reality than we understand. And many of these shamanic practices are still performed today, as they have been for thousands of years, by more Aboriginal peoples across the entire world. Some people may think they think of shamanism, maybe they think of Tibet, you know, and Tibetan culture and shamanic practices there. Some people may think of Native American Indians in North America. Then there's South American shamans. But there's also shamans in Europe, in Asia, Russian shamans, even forms of Celtic religion in the UK also embraced a type of shamanistic practices. I'm going to speak more of what I personally know of, which is more in line with Western North American types of shamanism. It will reflect, though, on South American and some Eastern shamanistic practices. Again, I'm not claiming I'm an expert. And I'm not a shaman, but I have been training and learning and incorporating these things into my life. And what it has done is it has helped me have a better understanding of our world. And I look at our world, our life here, our purpose here, and our everyday experiences, starting to look at it more through shamanic eyes, and putting my consciousness and putting our consciousness on a higher plane than just this physical plane. Now, there are a lot of teachers out there who talk about shamanism, who there are many books on the subject out there that you can find. Some of the books that I'm going to talk about and authors that I can recommend for those of you who may be interested in shamanism. There's one book by Michael Horner called The Way of the Shaman, which is an excellent book written a couple decades ago. Michael Horner had actually recently passed last year, I believe, and he had studied various shamanic practices all over the world and looked into it as well. But a lot of what I'm also going to refer to are the works of Sandra Ingerman. Now, I know more of Sandra Ingerman because the teachers that I met with and did shamanic training with were also trained by Sandra Ingerman, and they follow her way of interpreting shamanism and shamanic practices. That doesn't mean there's any right way. There is no right way. There are certain ways and certain beliefs, just like any other types of religion or spiritual beliefs, but there is no wrong way to understand shamanism. So you can go out and find books on the subject and read about it. You can do readings online to learn more about this type of practice. Now, I'll use some examples from, let's say, Native American culture, you know, where you may have your medicine man, the Wachashawakan, as the Lakota called it. I know a little bit of Lakota, so I might throw in some Lakota words, who deal with the spirits. And what a lot of these people will do is they've been trained and they've learned to interact with this spiritual world that is far different from the Western point of view. In shamanism, there are the three worlds or realms. There's the upper world, middle world, and lower world. Now, that doesn't mean heaven, earth, and hell for some people. It does mean, though, that there are different aspects to each of these worlds in which a shamanic practitioner or someone who is partaking of a shamanic journey can project their consciousness into one of these other realms in order to gather information for, say, healing purposes, to learning more about their own spiritual path, receiving messages from spirit guides, and incorporating those messages into our everyday life. So before I get into those practices or discussing the mechanics behind those practices, let me give you a little bit about my own background. Okay, I grew up in a Christian church, First Presbyterian, which really meant nothing to me other than I was bored out of my mind at church when I was a child. And, you know, grew up in a Christian Western thought pattern. But in my 20s, I just realized it didn't ring true for me. That's not putting down anybody's spiritual beliefs. Okay, you can be a devout Christian, Hindu, Muslim, and still follow a lot of these principles. And religion has nothing to do with it. Because for me, religion is man-made, that you follow what other people are telling you to do, where spiritualism is more of that one-on-one relationship with God, the Creator, however you want to look at your higher self, other spiritual beings and guides, angels, whatever you want to look at it as. It's a more personal experience, which is what I lean more towards than, you know, having to go to a church and, you know, confess your sins and having a priest tell you to say several Hail Marys or whatever. You don't need the intermediary. You can do this yourself. And so I started exploring a lot more. I started reading up on Native American spirituality. And then from there, kind of went over looking at other types of more Aboriginal spirituality in other societies. You know, I was learning some about, you know, the Celts and that form of paganistic society in England, South America, and even in Mexico, the Aztecs, the Mayans, those native peoples, and some of the spiritual beliefs that come through. And now, especially in South America, I feel a strong pull around the people of Peru and Bolivia and some of the shamans that practice there. And just learning about our connection with not only this world, but with nature, with animals. We're not just living here and leeching off the land. We're part of this planet. We're a part of this ecosystem. And this is why a lot of Native peoples, Aboriginal peoples, look at the Earth as our mother. She's sustaining life. She gives us life, sustains life. And when Native peoples start looking at the world and putting like the Earth Mother or the Great Spirit Father or Grandfather, they're putting it in relative terms because they know we're all related. Where in Western religions, God seems like this, you know, disassociated higher being who is sitting in judgment of us. And that's, to me, that's not the case at all. Instead, we have an interactive relationship that's right here at our fingertips. And when I started to learn about a lot of this, it started changing my whole perception of the world. Now, I'll freely admit, I've had my share of mistakes. I've made bad decisions. I have gone away from a spiritual path, followed a more material world path for a number of years. And now I'm being pulled back onto this path. I've walked that material path for whatever reason. Now I'm back. And in a way, I felt that that was still part of my path because I needed to learn more about the material world before I come into the back into the spiritual fold. When I was younger, I had a dream in high school, and I still remember this dream vividly, and I didn't fully understand it at the time. But I had this dream where I died in a dream. I died in this dream, and then I saw this room, the light, everything went black. And then the light in the room started to come up, and I could see my family, my parents and my brothers, standing around an open coffin. I could not see into the coffin, but I knew it was me. And they were staring down at my body. But then I looked over in the corner, and there I was, sitting on the corner with my arms folded around my knees, sitting on the floor, looking at my family with kind of a sad look on my face. Well, I bolted upright in bed. That dream kind of scared the hell out of me at the time. And really, it stuck with me after all of these years, like almost 30 years later, I still remember this dream. And what I think this dream, what I really think this dream was trying to tell me is it was beginning of my breaking off of my belief systems, where my family stayed relatively Christian. My identical twin brother, Bill, who passed away 2 years ago, you know, he and I used to have discussions because he was very Christian. And he was always, one time he was worried at me that, you know, when we die, he'd never see me again because I'd be burning in hell. And it was all I could do to like smack him up his head and said, stop being stupid. I didn't want to mock him. I just don't believe that. And again, not mocking anybody else's faith. I just don't believe there is that kind of punishment out there for us. If there's any kind of hell, we're living through it right now with things that are going on in this world. My beliefs started rolling more over into, you know, again, more spiritual beliefs, started reading on, you know, reincarnation, the idea of the recycling of our soul, coming and living many lifetimes. You know, as a paranormal investigator, I've gone around and have looked into different types, starting off with the old traditional beliefs of hauntings, like of ghosts, people who have died, they haven't crossed over to whatever. And over the years, that has drastically started to change with a new understanding about multiple realities, the understanding of all time happening at once. We've talked about this on Paranormal UK Radio on many different times and occasions about the nature of time, nature of reality, nature of multiple realities. And if that is all the case, then it's moving away. I found myself moving away from these really narrow views of the universe and reality in my life and starting looking at things from a bigger picture and how we are involved in this life, how we interact, how we're here, and why we're here. And you know what? I can't answer for everybody else why we're here. I think I understand it. And again, it goes back to a greater learning and understanding of our soul, our purpose. We are not physical beings. We are spiritual beings having a physical experience, a temporary physical experience. I believe our true nature is of spirit. We come from those spiritual realms. Our consciousness, you could call it the superconscious, not the ego. The ego is the human part, and that's what gets us into trouble so many different times in our lives. Instead, it is the higher consciousness, the higher self, is part of our true self. And we always have access to that higher self. The famous psychic Edgar Cayce in the early to mid 20th century, he would go into his trances and he would channel his higher self. It wasn't an external being. It wasn't an angel or an alien or some other person stepping in and speaking through him. It was him. But it was the higher self aspect of him that had access to all of these other different realms and knowledge of the past and future and all time, because it's all happening at once. And that's where a lot of people, Irene and I were having this discussion the other day, the idea of time travelers, or more likely the idea of being able to see through the veils and our limited perception of time, because I believe our linear view of time is only that way because that's the only way our brains can understand it and can process it from beginning, middle to end in a nice straight line when it's really not in a straight line and things are all happening at once, but we're only able to perceive the now and remember the past, but not the future. Getting into the different types of realms and realities, I mentioned this before, Whitley Strieber, the author of Communion. We got to interview him on Paranormal UK Radio earlier this year, talking about his new book and dealing with his deceased wife and still interacting with her and discussing these other realms. The other ideas of not only do we live this life and multiple other lives in the past and future, but we're also living different versions of this reality all around us. There could be 40, 50 different versions of me and you out there living in this, just slightly different variations of this world. Now, that's a real brain buster. And when I first started to learn about this concept, it really was a struggle. And I really struggled with it. I'm beginning to understand it a bit more now. Because, you know, I've interviewed and talked with people who have experienced some of these other realities. Whitley Strieber has mentioned, while doing deep trance meditation techniques, experiencing different realities where he's living, where his life is slightly different. Irene has mentioned before to me, she's encountered in some of her experiences in astral traveling, different realities where she and I are together and talking, and yet there's different versions of it. In one reality, I smoke. Well, I don't smoke. I've never smoked. Don't like it. My dad smoked when we were younger and we made him quit, and I never liked it. And I don't smoke, and I don't. I never have. And yet, in one of these realities, Irene has seen me smoke. Okay. So it's all part of the journey of our soul, our higher self, can not only bridge out into an experience of physical lifetime. I personally believe that the soul doesn't come in and inhabit a human body. I think an aspect of the soul does. I think that instead of us being a spirit form that can travel down here to Earth, inhabit a body until it dies, and moves out and goes out somewhere else, I look at it more like, picture, let's say, an amoeba floating in a void, and it puts out a tentacle, like an extension of itself, into a reality and comes down and experiences one lifetime. But at the exact same time, it's putting on another tentacle into another reality and experiencing that lifetime. And then it starts to look like hairs on an orange that's gone bad. Hair that's branching out and all of these different hairs going out and interacting with all of these other different realities all at the same time and bringing in that information to the higher self. That's kind of how I look at our lives. Now, do I know for a fact that that's the way it is? Nope, I don't. It's something that I've been processing and we've been trying to learn. Irene and I have had many discussions about it, and different things that have happened to us over the years that make us question the nature of reality and start looking at it in vastly different terms. So from a shamanic perspective, there are the three worlds, the upper, lower, and middle world. The upper world is one that encompasses our higher consciousness. It encompasses, if we want to meet with the angelic realm or those types of higher guides that work with us in that knowledge. The middle realm is actually this current realm. What we could perceive of as our world, the middle world. And with the middle world, you can interact with your animal totems, your animal spirit helpers and guides. And then there is the lower realm, which is not hell or Hades or anything negative in any way, shape, or form. It's just another aspect, and you could go down into the lower realms and gain a lot of information and learn about... It's of the natural world, and with that, you know, it's been described... By modern psychology, can use the term the collective unconscious. This is where powerful archetypes dance with the elements of nature and where our personalities today are still influenced. You can take these journeys using what's known as a shamanic journey. And during a shamanic journey... And I took classes learning how to do shamanic journeying a while back. It's putting yourself in an altered state of consciousness and allowing those images that come to you to accept them and understand what you're shown and what you're dealing with. And with more and more practice, you can learn to directly interact with these different realms and worlds. Interact with spiritual beings and entities from these other worlds, gather information, especially for learning to get information for healing. Healing people is one of the big things that I'm leaning towards as a shamanic practitioner, performing everything from a soul retrieval. Is one of the big, you may hear that term, a soul retrieval, which is a way of a type of shamanic healing. Extraction is another. And helping to adjust those energies in a person to get rid of some of the negativity or things that have built up in them over time and get rid of what they no longer need, bring back parts of themselves that may have fragmented out due to trauma, and help bring that healing. I myself have had a couple of shamanic healings done to myself and soul retrieval done. And it's an interesting experience. And I'm going to tell you, with shamanic journeying, it can be frustrating. When you're so grounded in this Western world and you don't want to trust what comes to your head. And this is one of the reasons why I strayed away from it for many years, is because I could not trust myself. I could not trust that I wasn't just making it up in my head. When I first started doing the shamanic journeying, I journeyed once to retrieve a native style name for myself. Sounds silly to some, but you know what? It's trying to get into that connection of a more, and not the Western world, but more into the Aboriginal type of world and being a little bit more connected with nature. And sometimes I would try these and nothing would happen. Or I would start to have things happening and it would feel like a dream playing out in my head. And it felt like I was just my imagination making it up. And I couldn't trust it. I didn't want to trust it. I didn't want to think, oh, this is just an hallucination. You're making it all up. You don't want to be one of these, delusional people who believe anything. And, my rational, scientific Western mind kept sticking its nose back into it and torpedoing a lot of the work that I had done. Now, after many years, some of the journeys that I took and some of the things that I learned back then, I had to relearn again and in the last couple of years. And it was still a struggle because I was struggled with my ego. My ego, my rational mind, I couldn't put it aside. And that is one of the big failings in learning how to do this. Everyone can do it. You don't have to be a psychic medium. You don't have to have special abilities. You have to learn to be able to quiet your mind. You have to be able to learn to let go of ego and allow yourself to have experiences. And then when you do have an experience, don't dismiss it out of fact. Can you sit there and say that anything that you experience is an absolute fact it happened? No, you can't. did something meaningful come out of it? Did you learn something? And even if you didn't learn something, was it something that just kind of stuck with you? Because it may be a lesson that you haven't learned yet. It may be something that you'll remember more later in the future that'll have meaning for you. Kind of like that dream I had, I mentioned earlier about seeing my death. And it wasn't a physical death. It was the death of a belief system. It was a death of, it was symbolic of a transformation from one state of being to another, which is what death really is. And so I would started off doing these, you can call them meditations, you can call them journeying, whatever. I didn't quite know what I was doing back then. I had never really been trained. I was just reading and trying to learn on my own. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I didn't get very far because I had no one else to really interact with. There were some online communities I was dealing with. This old site that's no longer around, Shaman Sapiens. I always loved that site. I interacted with a lot of great people there. But I don't think I was still physically and mentally and spiritually ready to fully walk that path because I had a lot of my own to work out. And one of the lessons I had to learn in this life, and I understood it more when I started following the shamanic path, was the idea of balance. There were certain things in life that needed to be balanced out. One of them was my spiritual self. Others were preconceived concepts that I may have had, or maybe I was leaning one way too much, and then I had to balance out and move more towards another direction and experience that. There were some personal things that happened that I really don't want to get into publicly, but I definitely saw the pattern of balancing in my life to where I started going through this transformation on a spiritual and emotional level to become who I am today. I've had many things happen in my life. I regret some of the most stupid mistakes I've made. And I was always had a habit of beating myself up. And one of the things that I suffer from is clinical depression. And I've been more open to that than I have in my life because I always thought it was something I could fight and get cured of. And I can't. Because it's a chemical imbalance in my brain. I do need to take medication to balance that out. Because growing up as a kid, my identical twin brother Bill had it worse than me. We were both extremely depressed, emotional kids that drove my parents nuts because we were reacted so or overreacted to every situation. And the one nasty thing with depression, it beats you down, convinces you you're no good, makes you unhappy and prevents you from bettering yourself and finding happiness in life. And now, after going through many struggles and trials over the years, I'm finally at a place in my life where I'm happy. I'm allowing myself to be happy. And that happiness was always there for me to grasp. I had to allow myself and tell myself I was worthy enough to accept that happiness. And even though I made mistakes, even though there are some regrets I have that I look back on and I cringe and go, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I'm getting to the point now where I'm able to tell myself it's okay. And even the bad things that happened to me or the stupid decisions I made was a learning experience. I did a couple of things that were really stupid and led me down the wrong path. But you want to know something? I learned from it. And you know something? You could tell somebody, yeah, don't put your hand on the stove. It's hot. You'll burn yourself. Now, some people may understand that and not do it, but they're not going to understand what it physically felt like. Sometimes it's better to get burned because then you will know exactly what it feels like, exactly what the consequences are, and how to change your life. And sometimes the only way we can learn in this lifetime is by our mistakes, is by having those experiences. And during those experiences, we may be telling ourselves, oh my God, why the hell am I going through this? Why did I lose my job? Why am I getting divorced? Why is this happening to me? And people get all in despair over it. And yeah, the time sucks. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. It sucks. But when you get on the other side of it, you can choose to either be bitter about it and be a victim, or incorporate what you've learned and don't make those mistakes again, improve your life, or, you know, find that happiness and the good in your life, things to be thankful for. I never used to be thankful for anything. I was a selfish person for a long time. Now I'm thankful every day for all the good I have in my life, for my wife, for my home, for my friends that I work with, and we have these bonds. I don't have a lot of friends, personal friends. I have a lot of acquaintances and other people that I like, but there's not a lot of people very, very close in my life. I've always been kind of solitary that way. That's not saying I hate people. I like people. I hate some. Well, I hate what some people do. And I've had falling out with people over the years. I've had people personally attack me, being very bitter about things and spreading lies. I've been wronged in a lot of different ways. And do I hate those people? No, not at all. If I ran into them again, well, I may not go out of my way to give them much of the time of day, but I don't care, because I'm not going to allow them to interfere in my life. I'm not going to allow them to affect my feelings in life, because I want to remain focused on the positivity in life and learning and growing. One example I learned when I was going through my training is, you know, when you're driving on the road and somebody cuts you off, what do a lot of us do? We give the finger. We roll down the window and yell at the person. We blare on the horn like, you moron, what the hell? Where did you learn to drive? What are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, that may make us feel superior. I'm not going to say it makes us feel good, because there's no good in it, because you're using anger and negativity towards another person and trying to make yourself feel superior to somebody else because they made a mistake. Okay, do people do stupid things? Yep, and so do you. We all do stupid things. We all make mistakes. And we have to look at that and realize we're human. We're not perfect. We have things that we are here to learn. You know, I'm 54 years old. And for a while there, I thought, why do I have to keep continuing in this life? What more is there to learn? And boy, I got a wake-up call on that one. There is a lot left to learn. And I realize that I am learning just as much now as I did when I was a teenager. You never stop learning in this life. You stop learning in this life when you're underground. And even then, you don't stop learning, because only the physical body and that physical consciousness has reached a conclusion. But you, as a spiritual being, will go on and continue to learn and grow. And that is our purpose in life. That is why we're here. Again, I'll refer back to Whitley Strieber, because even though Whitley Strieber has written books on the alien abduction phenomenon, that he claims he was abducted, that he's interacted with these aliens, he's talked about ufology, but his books, actually, there's a lot of spiritual aspects to his encounters that touch on what I feel is that more shamanic reality that we deal with, the different layers, different levels of existence that all interact with our physical world. He had mentioned previously that he has encountered people he has known who have died during his abduction experiences. Well, how can that be? How can somebody died be on a UFO? That sounds insane. It sounds ridiculous. But yet, if we're talking about altered consciousness, altered states of reality, it's a possibility. It's definitely a possibility. There's another possibility, and again, coming back around from the paranormal aspect, that we share this world, this physical reality right here on planet Earth. We share this reality with other intelligences, some as intelligent as we are, some greater intelligence than us. And yet we walk around every day not even knowing they're there, not even acknowledging their existence. I believe that helps to explain some, not all, but some of the UFO reports that people have seen, the cryptid type creatures that people have encountered. I do personally believe that Bigfoot is most likely, I'm not going to say definitively, but most likely one of these types of entities which exists in between our physical realm and other realms, other natural realities that are all occupying this space. But just like we can only perceive a sliver of the electromagnetic spectrum as visible light, we see a sliver of that spectrum, and that spectrum stretches out way farther in both ways towards the infrared and the ultraviolet that our eyes can't see. We can't perceive it, but it's there. X-rays, gamma rays, radio waves. We can't see it, but there it is. Ultraviolet light. Things that now we are using with technology in order to see. Your night vision camera that's popular with ghost hunters and other paranormal investigators, you know, shows those spectrums of light that we can't see and reinterprets it in such a way so that we can. The idea of doing a shamanic journey and projecting our higher selves and our subconscious into these other realms is almost like using an infrared camera to look in night vision, or using a radio to tune in to a certain frequency in order to listen to your favorite station. Okay, and this is another example of reality. All of these radio stations are broadcasting at once. They're all overlapping each other, broadcasting at once, but you have to tune in to the exact frequency you want to listen to that program or listen to that show. And if you stay on that radio, you only listen to one station all the time, you only understand that station, even though there are hundreds of other stations out there broadcasting through the airwaves, but AM and FM and ham radio operators all broadcasting at different frequencies at the same time, but yet you're only aware of the one because that's what you're tuned into. That is our reality. Those other realities exist. They're real, they're there, and we can interact with them. We just have to learn to turn the station some. Talking a little bit about shamanic journeying. Now, the actual practice of shamanic journeying, if you want to learn more about it, I'm going to suggest Sandra Ingerman's book, Shamanic Journeying, A Beginner's Guide. And when I went through my training, I trained with this couple, Jim and Roxanne, who run the Sacred Hoop Ministry outside of Woodland Park, Colorado. And I trained with them for over a year. And with them, I learned the art of shamanic journeying. And with journeying, it's altering your state of consciousness. And it's a form of hypnosis using rhythmic drumming. Now, you can hear we had a sample of some drumming in the beginning of this program. Just rhythmic drumming. And here's a sample I'm going to play for you right now. Now, you'll understand that this type of drumming, it's monotonous, repeats fast, and the actual vibrations help to lull you into a altered state of consciousness. Usually, you're lying down. Some people will sit, others will lie down, get comfortable, blanket over your head, and put over your eyes a bandana or scarf or something to block out the light if you can't be in a totally dark room, so that you don't have any light distractions. Make sure you don't have any noise distractions. And then you listen to the drumming and allow it to alter your consciousness, to lull you into an altered state of awareness. Now, with that, you've set your intention beforehand. What do you want to accomplish in a journey? Do you just want to visit one of the realms and learn more about it? Do you want to meet a spirit guide or a totem, spirit animal? Which one is your spirit animal that you're going to work with moving forward on your journeys? And let me talk a little bit about spirit animals, okay? A spirit animal is not an actual spirit of an animal that attaches itself and works with you. Everything, you have to look at shamanism and a lot of its terms as metaphors. They're metaphors that allow our brain to interact with certain types of entities and realities that we may not fully understand. And in many cases, the type of animal that comes to you has certain meanings and what they represent. I have my totem animal. I don't really want to talk about it publicly, but my animal incorporates a lot of things that I need to learn on my journey, especially at this time. You can have several totem animals or spirit guides that you work with throughout your time, and you may have a primary, you may have others that come and go, and you may have one that you work with for a while, but then you've grown or you've learned enough in one area that it's time to move on to another teacher. And that's the thing, we're always constantly learning. And so when you listen to the drumming and allow it to alter your consciousness, and you focus your intent on what it is that you want to accomplish. You want to go meet your spirit animal. You want to meet a spirit guide. You want to gain a message on a certain path. Or in the practice of shamanic healing, is journeying to find out what is causing a person to be ill, or if they need a soul retrieval, what you need to do as a practitioner to help heal that person. And again, you are not the person doing the healing. Okay. This is where we have to let ego step out, step aside, put our ego aside. As a practitioner working with these energies, I am what we call the hollow bone. It's for those higher energies to work through and affect, and they're the ones that do the healing, that affect the change. We are just the physical conduit here in this reality that's allowing these energies to come through and work. I have performed some healings in I have worked with people on doing soul retrievals, on finding power animals, and helping find those fragmented parts of themselves because of trauma to affect healing. And, you know, when I first started doing this, I struggled with it. I wasn't quite sure. And again, as I mentioned before, allowing my rational mind to get in the way, and it was a big stumbling block I had to get over. And even today, I still am not the greatest journeyer. I still struggle with it sometimes. And I know a lot of it has to do with my physical problems in the physical world and my rational, analytical mind getting in the way and being too left brain and not allowing the right brain to have a little bit more free rein and control. So you do these journeys to gather information, to gather what you need to do to affect a positive outcome for people. Now, another concept with shamanism, and people need to understand this because religion, especially, you know, Western types of religion, look at everything in the form of good and evil. God is good, Satan is evil. Angels are good, demons are evil. And you think of heaven above, very light and positive, hell below, very dense and negative. We got to get past those concepts. Those concepts are used as metaphors to describe aspects, certain aspects, but they're two extremes. I want you to take a look at nature. Look at everything in nature. Look at the animals in nature. Are any of them good or evil? No, they just are. Is the lion eating the gazelle evil? Well, the gazelle might think so because he's being eaten by the lion. He's killed by the lion. But the lion is doing what it was designed to do, and it's feeding its family and raising cubs and continuing the bloodline and continuing to survive. The gazelle didn't deserve to be eaten, didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't punished. It just was. It existed. It did its lifetime. Its lifetime ended. Another creature took nourishment from it and is also going on in its lifetime. And that lion could get shot by poachers and killed, or get disease and die and still whatever. Again, is the lion good or evil? It's neither. And that's the way we need to look more at some of these spiritual concepts, and especially people in the paranormal community. Getting away from the concept of good spirits, bad spirits. Oh, I got a negative spirit here. Okay. And in America especially, we seem to be infatuated with the idea of demons. Oh, there's demons around every corner. I got demons running all through me. Well, yeah, not exactly. Because in some cases, even, you know, Irene and some of the work she's done has dealt with human spirits. I've dealt with human spirits or non-human spirits that may not be very friendly. They may do things that we would consider to be negative. Does it mean that that spirit is negative? No. Is a mosquito evil? Well, it's coming on you and sucking on your blood. You're getting no benefit out of it. The mosquito's getting all the benefit. Is that mosquito evil? No. It's doing what it needs to do to survive. The same thing sometimes goes with some of these spiritual entities that we deal with. What people may think of as a demon may be a type of entity or a low-level thought form, a type of energy that needs a particular other type of energy to survive and continue. We've talked in the past before about tulpas, thought form energies. They're created out of intense emotional energy. So a lot of times, very negative emotional energy. So if you use negative emotional energy to create or to form together energy, because energy cannot be created nor destroyed, it just changes form. So if you're changing a form that requires a negative type of energy in order to survive, it will create those types of situations, latch on to somebody in attachment, and create turmoil in their lives to create that negative energy it needs to feed and continue. That does not mean it's an evil spirit. We may consider the actions to be evil or negative. Doesn't actually mean it's evil. And just because you want to call on God or the power of Christ compels you or however you want to fight it, it's not that you're calling on a higher power. You're calling on another opposite power to control it, to push it out. Again, you can't destroy it. It cannot be destroyed. It can only be pushed out, change form. And so if you have a lot of negative energy in a location, it's bringing in other types of energy that will counteract it and push it out. That's how you can affect a cleansing of a home, per se, like that might have some type of infestation of some nasty things in there. There are things that are causing people to be upset, harm, physical harm, making them sick, can be pushed out. The shaman can do this. The shaman, when looking at a person who comes in that they're having problems in their life, let's say someone is an alcoholic. Okay. They're dealing with alcoholism. In some cases, and this is going to sound very weird to Westerners. Okay. That person may not have an actual physical disease. They may have a spiritual attachment. One of the things that I was told in my training is that when you go out, you can have drinks, the first two drinks are yours. Anything after that, you're drinking for somebody else. And if you think about it, when you lower your inhibitions and you start wanting more and more drinking, in some cases, there could be the spiritual essence of a person who's died or other type of entity. Let's say you had someone who drank too much in life and they died and they're still hanging around and they still crave that physical action and feeling of drinking. And they may attach themselves to a person in order to feel that again, to feed off of their energy. And somebody who may, you know, be emotionally down or have a weakness that allows these things to come in and attach to them, can attach to that person and feed off of making them become more and more of an alcoholic. They're trying to continue living life and living what they experienced, and they're having a direct influence on that person. Is the person possessed with the spirit of somebody else? No. But they can be influenced. We can be influenced by spiritual energies. We can be influenced to do and not do certain things, or we don't really understand why, because there's energies all around us. One of the things that I tell people when I'm training them for to be a paranormal researcher, you know, everyone gets attracted to the latest gadgets. Oh, I want, you know, I want the new Ovilus 4, or I want this, you know, full spectrum camera gizmo, or I want, you know, an SLS camera connect setup. You want all of these things, these great tools. Well, you know what the greatest tool is for investigation? Is you, your body, your feelings. And I learned that over time too, because I could walk into, and I don't consider myself quote unquote psychic, but we all have this ability to listen to our bodies and tune into things that in the past we would dismiss and ignore and blow off. I can walk in and feel the energy in a location. I can feel that energy. I can feel when something's around and is affecting people. Sometimes people will be in a location and they start taking on personality traits, or they maybe suddenly get emotional and start crying and they don't understand why. They're not possessed, but they're picking up on that energy and it's kind of coming through them a bit, almost like a channel. And I've learned to use and trust my instincts and intuitions going into these locations, and I use it as much, if not more, than the scientific equipment we use in order to understand what it is we're dealing with and how to affect it. Too many times paranormal groups will come in, they'll investigate, collect evidence, leave, and then never come back, and the people are still dealing with their issues. This is part of my gradual change over time where that's no longer satisfactory to me, and I don't want to leave people in a lurch like that. I want to affect actual help and change. And I've been learning how to do that over time. And this is to a point where in some shamanic practices, you can affect that change. You can try to clean out a location, move things on, convince a human spirit to move on. There's a practice called depossession, which we'll go into in more detail in a future show because we're starting to run out of time here. That's not an exorcism. It is getting these attached energies that are attached to somebody to move on and go where they need to go and stop hanging around here in the physical life. So that's been my introduction to shamanism, shamanic journey, shamanic practices, and shamanic reality. Our reality is so much broader and wider than we know, and there is so much to learn. So what I'm going to be doing is, this is not going to be a weekly or a biweekly monologue show. I am going to be bringing on guests. I'm trying to get a hold of Jim and Roxanne. I want to bring them on. I'm going to bring other people on, not only shamans, but people also who have experiences with different types of paranormal aspects, from paganism to all other types of even spiritual beliefs, so that we can learn more about this world and how it all compares and how it's all interrelated. So until then, I want to thank you all for tuning in. Thank you so much for being a part of this first show. Really excited. We will be back in 2 weeks with another new show of Shamanic Reality. Thanks again, and Mitakuye Oyashin. Have a great night, everybody.